Okay, turn to Acts 20. Acts 20. Let's see, we'll get... Johnny's going to read Acts 20, 17 through 19. Let's see, I.L., Matthew 16, 22. Ryan, Psalm 63, verse 1. Brian Mitchell, John 13, 14. Kenny, Matthew 14, 14. Let's see who we got here. Phil, you can read Genesis 40, verse 6. Okay, Acts chapter 20 is a farewell message of the Apostle Paul. He's on his way to Rome. He knows he's going to be executed. So this is the last time that he is ever going to see the leaders of the church at Ephesus, which they say there could have been 50,000 people in the church. There were many, many house churches. They didn't have a lot of buildings like that, but... So he is meeting with them, and what he is, of course, he's warning for the future, but one of the things he's doing is he is reminding them of his approach in ministry, which is, we use the word philosophy. Philosophy, in this sense, is a belief held by a person that forms the guiding principle for behavior. So in other words, Paul is explaining, this is how I approached my ministry for you. So I'm going to probably do two or three lessons just on his statement here in chapter 20. And we're going to talk about a philosophy of ministry. And the first one today, he's going to talk about serving, humility, and compassion as three guiding principles here. Let's read Acts 20, verse 17 through 19.
From Miletus he sent to Ephesus and called for the elders of the church. And when they had come to him, he said to them, "You know from the first day that I come to Asia, and what manner I always lived among you, serving the Lord with humility, with many tears and trials, which happened to me by the plotting of the Jews."
Okay. And so, just before I go into it, here's a simple thing. If you're building a textual sermon, he explains to them, you remember or you know how I ministered to you. And then verse 19, serving the Lord with all humility, with many tears. Okay? So it's all in the text. All right, let's talk first of all, approach of ministry or philosophy of ministry that he has here has to do with serving the Lord. This is simple, but it is profound. Paul never forgot. Think about all of the different aspects of ministry. He was a missionary at one time. He was a tent maker. He was a miracle worker, a church planter. He had such a broad ministry in different cities, in different nations, but he never forgot who he was serving, and that is so important. Serving the Lord. How did I minister to you? I remembered at all times I was serving the Lord. Why is that so important? Paul knew he was not serving people. Ministry, pastoring. If you ever want to be a pastor, but it's true for all aspects of ministry. Ministry is to people. In other words, they will receive the benefit of your ministry. But Paul says it's not for people. Okay, there is a difference. And so if you're ministering to people, you will discover at times they will put demands on you. They will pressure you. They will try to manipulate you at times. And the point of that is you will have people who will try to get you to do things you know are not actually in line with God's will. They're not a part of your purpose. We have, in the early days of the Prescott Church here, Had a lady that was pressuring. She was influential. She was pressuring Pastor Mitchell to open a home for unwed mothers, pregnant girls. That's what we need to do. Another one was that we needed to start a, not a convent, but commune. That's the word I'm looking for. Two different things there. There were no nuns here. Okay. A commune that we all live together, but Pastor just said no. So in other words, these people were disappointed. They may have been upset with him. Some of those are no longer even in the church. But like the Apostle Paul, we're not serving people, we're serving the Lord. Number two, Paul said, I wasn't serving myself. So we have to be honest. Sometimes we do the right things, but actually we're doing it for us, for our own flesh, for our egos. And so we can make decisions at times in life and even ministry. It's all about us. It's not about God and His will. Matthew 16, 22.
Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, far be it from you, Lord. This shall not happen to you.
Okay, so here is Peter. He is, in King James, New King James, rebuking Jesus Christ as God in the flesh. He is rebuking God, telling him, absolutely not, that's a terrible idea. Was it really for Jesus? Or was it for Peter? As we know, they had wrong ideas that they were going to get good jobs and powerful positions. And so this is the problem. Sometimes you can be tempted to make decisions. It's better for me. Maybe not so much for God's will. So at all times, Paul says, my philosophy of ministry is, what does God want me to do? I am serving the Lord. So that answers the, people want you to do something? No, I'm sorry, I'm serving the Lord. I would prefer to do something, but God's will says that I'm serving the Lord. And that should, that question should dominate every decision. It should determine the choices of your life. Serving the Lord is the first part of his philosophy of ministry. Now, as part of this, this is extremely simple. If you're serving the Lord, your main priority in life is relationship with God. You may do things for the Lord. You might be in a band, drama, I don't know, what security, what ministry you have, media team, whatever it is that you may do in the church and you may do for other people. If you're serving the Lord, your main priority is relationship with God. You can never be so busy working for God that you don't have time for God. That's a mistake. I can't go to prayer. I got so much to do. There's people that I need to see. There's things, sermons I need to write. So I don't have time to read my Bible. That's a terrible mistake. Psalm 63, verse 1.
O God, you are my God. Early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water.
Okay, early will I seek you. I think, you know, you can read your Bible. You can pray. Technically, you could do it at any hour of the day or night. But early means priority. That's important. I was up very early this morning, and I have already read numbers of the chapters of the Bible that I read every day because it is a priority. Everything. I explain when I'm reading my Bible how God attracts me to things. I quickly write them down, but I never stop my Bible reading to work on a sermon because I am serving the Lord. The sermon is what's going to help other people. But my job is to spend time with God. That's crucial. And Paul says, this is how I approach ministry, serving the Lord. Number two, humility. This is actually a funny thing to say, is remember, people, I was humble. That'd be like, you know, the old joke is they gave him a humble badge and he wore it to church. And so they took it off of him. It seems a funny thing to say. Humility is not false modesty. That is not what Paul is saying, you know, that there are people, they think they're being humble. by this. They're asked to sing, and they're like, I don't know why they asked me to sing. I can't really. Then sit down. Let's get somebody else, right? That's false modesty. That's not being humble. Humility is simply honest recognition. You face the truth. That's why Paul says, I served with humility. You're not bragging about how humble he is. He simply says, when I served the Lord, I did it with an honest recognition of the truth. Humility starts with everything I am, everything I have, everything I can do, it comes from God. That's the starting point of humility. If you're honest, here's the problem. When you start doing a few right things in life, God may help you, you may succeed. People may pat you on the back, or you may see some numerical success or whatever. But if you are, so what we do is they're like, you know, that was one of the best sermons that has ever been preached, you know, or altar calls, or, you know, witnesses, or whatever it is you do for the Lord. If you are honest, honest recognition, God help, I'll talk about me, I don't know about you. God helps me in spite of myself, not because of. I have ministered to the Lord sometime when I had a really bad attitude. I didn't want to be there. And yet God, you know, incredible things happen. So when I'm feeling it and I'm in the zone, it's like, that was me. But honestly, there are times where I didn't want to be there. I had a bad attitude. I hadn't prepared well, and God helped anyway. So honest recognition is, it all comes from Him. And God helps me in spite of myself, not because of myself. That's humility. If you are honest, we all have character flaws. All of us can be selfish. All of us can serve for the wrong motives at times. Pride, what we're going to get out of it. But God allows us to minister anyway. That is humility. If you keep that in mind when your head is starting to get the size of Texas, you say, you know what? But if I'm honest, that's what humility is. That's why Paul could say he wasn't bragging. If you are humble, humility has some practical outflows. Humble people do a couple of things. Humility means you're willing to do what is good for others. When you're making a choice, humility is to lower. You put yourself in a lower position. So sometimes that means it might not be the best for you. It's good for other people. John 13:14.
If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also to wash one another's feet.
Okay, you have to understand this. Jesus is God in the flesh, which we knew. The disciples, they weren't totally clear on that concept, but they knew he was a great teacher, a great man, a miracle worker. The job that Jesus just does here by washing the feet was the lowest servant did that. Right? This wasn't a talented position. We scouted you from a high university to give it. This was the, anybody could do this. So why did Jesus wash their feet? You know, we look for the deep meat. What is the deep meat? Their feet were dirty. That's why. Their feet needed washing. So Jesus says, I do what's good for you, not for me. So humility goes through life saying, how can I help you? How can I serve your life? How can I serve your ministry? The second part of humility is willing to take a lower place. Jesus took the form of a servant. So in other words, if you want everybody to know who you are, taking the place of a servant, that seems to be backwards, right? He's the most awesome foot washer we've ever seen. But the reason why Jesus did this, the disciples were fighting for attention, which is often what we do. I'll do the right thing if people are noticing me. Can I be on stage? Can I have a microphone? Can I get my name somewhere mentioned? But a lower place, you're not fighting for attention. You're not trying to outdo your brother. Ministry should never be a competition. How did, you know, the guy tells you, I prayed for somebody and their leg grew out 1 inch, so you now try to find somebody with a leg 2 inches short. So you say, one, that's nothing. That's what we do. We make everything a competition. And then humility, there is a time that we testify. It's a good thing to be excited to tell your brother. But I want to tell you, one of the very healthy practices you can do as a, if you want to be a man of God, is do something good and keep your mouth shut. Don't put it on social media. Don't announce to your bros the good that you did, which is sometimes is killing you. I want to tell them how great I am. That's humility. Third philosophy of ministry here, Paul says, it's compassion. You can't minister to people on any level, whether that is working with new converts, Bible studies, or pastoring at any level. If you don't care for people, it's not going to work well. Because people can tell. People can tell if you care or not. That's why it is so true. If you don't care for people, you can smile. Have you lost weight? You can put sales techniques. But people know who cares about them. When I go into a store and a guy starts complimenting me, but he wants a sale. I don't tell you like, really? I thank you. The other thing is, if you don't care about people, the problem is ministry on any level has problems. It has disappointments, insults, violations. I've had people I've done the most for them, they've treated me the worst. So if I'm doing it for reward, for feedback, for, you know, deep appreciation, if I don't care about people, I'm going to say, why should I keep doing this? If people treat me like that. So if you are ministering for your ego or some benefit you think you're getting out of it, you're not going to make it without compassion. So Paul gives his philosophy of ministry. He says, my ministry is based on compassion, verse 19, with many tears. Tears. I cared what was going on. Compassion, the word means to feel sympathy inside. It literally means that your insides hurt. That's actually the original word in the Greek. So in other words, compassion means you have concern or you care for people. Compassion begins with awareness. If you care, you see. You see the needs of other people. Matthew 14:14.
And when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them and healed their sick.
Okay, he saw. That's where compassion starts. He saw a great multitude. He saw their needs. Genesis 40, verse 6.
When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled.
Okay, he saw they were troubled. Another translation says he saw they were sad. This is actually the conversation that opened up his whole destiny. Because this is the dream that was troubling both of them. They both had dreams, right? He saw. That is so important in this. Are you aware, when you interact with people at work, at church, family, whatever it might be, are you aware of needs? Does it ever occur to you, like Joseph, these guys look sad. So he wanted to find out what's up. Do you notice that? Does it ever occur to you, the people you work with, come, they're hurting. They're concerned about things. I remember we were working on a building, the guy that installed the stalls and in the toilets. Is that guy, he seemed very down, very sad. So I asked him what's going on, and it was a stepdaughter, I think, that was dying or very, very seriously ill. So are you aware? That is true. In church today, I challenge you. I periodically give a challenge to disciples. In church this morning, when you come, you're meeting your bros, you're going to sing, you're going to enjoy the preaching. Hopefully, God's going to speak to you. Will you be aware of those who will be missing this morning? There will be people this morning who won't be here. And the fact that they're not here might not be a good sign. It might be because they're sick. It might be because they are thinking, what's the use? Nobody cares because they've stumbled into sin. Might be because some religious wacko has gotten into their ear at work. Are you even aware? Do you know who is not in church? That's where compassion starts, is awareness. Compassion then starts with awareness, but it means you actually care. With many tears, the needs of others in some ways should bother you. It should disturb you when people are not doing well, so that you want to help. I'm not talking about imbalance. I know there are people that are imbalanced about this, but it should make you want to help or to do something about it. The problem is compassion doesn't come natural to us. Did I give Philippians 2:20 to anybody? I think I forgot that one. Philippians 2:20, I have no man like-minded who will care for your state. Here's the problem, is we are all selfish. And so I'll speak for myself and say that you are selfish too. It's in us. Selfishness comes to us. Pastor Mitchell used to say, pray that God will give you a burden for souls and a love for people. One of the turning points of my discipleship, I was involved. I had a Bible study. I did many things, but I recognized, if I was honest, I didn't really care for people. I didn't really care what was happening in their life. And so I went to my father, Pastor Mitchell, and asked him, I know this is not good. I'm doing right thing, not that I'm not involved, but it's not from my heart, honestly. And he said, then pray, Greg, that God will give you a burden for souls and a love for people. And I did, and God changed something in me. Lisa and I began to get involved, actively get involved with new converts, hurting people, different ones. I changed from that moment. So, what about you? If you are honest, do you actually care about people? So here is Paul. He is summing up. He is one of the most successful ministers, pastors, missionaries you could ever think of in life. He says, this is my philosophy of ministry, serving the Lord, humility and compassion. Okay, let's open for some questions. Something you want to ask, something this will bring to mind. Ryan.
You talked about selfishness. I know that's probably the biggest thing I deal with. What are some things that you think, like, you know, that can combat that directly? Like, what's...
Yeah, so selfishness in the same way, like I asked Pastor Mitchell, it has to be a miracle. If I showed you tips, it wouldn't help if it doesn't come from the heart. Something has to change in the heart. So I began to pray, God, you have to put love in me. So in you, if you're concerned about selfishness, God, you have to change my heart to make me not selfish or not so selfish, which that's really what we're praying for. So it has to be a miracle, Ryan. But on the other hand, if you were not selfish, you would act in certain ways. So it's the same as marriage. People, I'm not in love anymore. But if you acted like you did when you were in love, some things would change. Feelings will follow action. So they're both. If you just try to do the right thing or act like you are not selfish, it won't work unless you have the first part. But if you have the first part, you have to do the second part as well. Mm-hmm. So that would be, so what would unselfishness look like? What are the manifestations of selfishness? Do the opposite. But if you're crying out for a miracle, God will honor that. He'll help you.
That's a great. How do you, overcome? You mentioned imbalance and compassion. How do you there's an imbalance?
Well, imbalance is often, there are people that can't, you know, I know people that can't even function in life. They're driving down the street, every person they see, I gotta stop. Because, you know, you can't. And that's number one. Number two, you also have to have a balance. I can't save everybody. So I do my best when people are in need. I do my best to reach out to them. But when they make it clear that they don't want to serve God or are rejecting that, I have to move on. I care deeply about people, but at the end of the day, people are going to do what people are going to do. So it's just a balance. It's imbalanced to think you're going to save every person in the whole world. So there are times you got to let go. I got to leave them to God. Who knows? God will do something later on down the road, but I can't lose sleep at night over people who don't want to do right. So that's kind of the balance. And that's part of everything I do. Many of the questions people ask, I comes back to asking for wisdom. I need to know that. I need to feel that. It's time to let go. Work with new converts. Nope, you can't. There's only so many hours in the day. You've gone 17 times and they haven't even come to church once. Probably need to move on, right? And so that's how it works. David?
In a church our size, how do you notice when someone's not here? I feel like I want to notice and I try to notice, but...
Yeah, it's a discipline, I guess. You know, this building was very easy because everybody sat in the exact same seat every time, right? That was one of the reasons why we wound up having to put Chris Hart on staff, is when we came in the big building. I get people, they want to try out new seats. So I thought, man, I tell Jesse, man, they're missing. No, they're sitting on the other side. I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, that was what was happening, is I had people that come like, hi, how you doing? Well, the surgery, my head fell off, and then they sort of back, like, what? I didn't even know that. You were in the hospital? You know, I didn't even know, they're missing me because of the building. So in some ways, it's a discipline. Sometimes you have to work by lists. That's the real, you're checking, in all honesty. And so, you know, probably there are, it's not literally every person in the whole church. Who's most vulnerable? That's kind of how you look at it, right? Which would be new converts, older people, sick people, whatever. Yeah.
Once you realize who's missing, what actions do you recommend?
Well, you find out. You ask their best friend, their family member. You call them, you text them, you visit them. Find out. Find out what's going on. Yeah. You gotta take action to discover.
How do you balance, like, working with multiple people? Like, is it depending on the needs, you follow up on that person more than this one, or if this one is responding more than the other? I mean, how do you balance that?
Well, yes, there is a logic to it, Ben. I mean, obviously, you don't keep. The idea is of follow-up, number one, is follow-up, you're building relationship. You're making them like you, right? So it's not straightening them out. You're making them like you. So then you have concern they're missing, finding out what's going on with them. Yes, that's true, but then there are people, they find a rhythm. Now they're coming, so I can show attention to somebody else. But a lot of that, Ben, so much of ministry is sensed. That's why I pray for wisdom in everything. I sense, and you have to feel it. And then there are natural limits. You can't follow up personally on 20 people at the same time. It's just not going to work. So when you have, if you're pioneering, you get a flood of people, God has to do a miracle beyond your ability. Otherwise, if it's just mathematics, it doesn't work, right? I can only spend so much time in a day, especially working pastors. They're the most time stressed. So therefore, God has to step in and do miracles. So you pick your moments. And one of the things, Ben, especially I train my men, is you will get a lot more done, and you'll have a lot more time in life and working with people if you avoid dead, lost people. Okay, there are people that have zero evidence of conversion. They're a dead loss. Move on. Religious people are a dead loss. Don't bother. that they're a time waster, psycho people who, you know, they're mental, they're out there, and welfare super very VDPs, very draining or demanding people. They're dead losses. So you have to learn how to, nope, all right, this person has potential. But that's a prayer thing, you sense it. So all that put together, then you sense who you should spend time on. Daniel?
Was there a period in your life where you realized you lacked awareness and then
Yeah, awareness was, that was a compassion thing. Yeah, I was very self-absorbed. I really enjoyed life. I really enjoyed the ministries I was in, but it was very self-absorbed. I was in bands. I had a blast playing in band. I'm busy in bands, but it was about me, you know? That's what I like doing. We were doing good. I'm not saying it wasn't doing good, but my motivation. So when you ask for compassion, God opens your eyes and gives you awareness of what's going. Lift up your eyes and see the harvest. They're white already, right? That's what Jesus is saying. So when you do that, you, again, how do you do that? You're looking for, I identified new converts. I started to get involved. I started trying to identify who's missing. That guy's always here. He's not here. What's up? So you kind of try to discipline yourself. And if that doesn't come naturally, you don't have a great brain that can hold it all mentally, then make lists. That's a practical.
When you move in churches as a pastor, I imagine you can no longer focus on the previous, you know, congregation. You're not there. And so you focus on the people that you're working on.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Yeah.
So is that also true in a larger congregation where there's an area of focus where you simply can't, you know, try to, like, if you pick a people group, or is that right? Or do you simply just try to have larger eyes to watch everything?
Well, yeah, in some ways. I mean, there are people that are, just absolutely faithful, right? We have people in church. If Bill Hunt doesn't come to church today, we're going to be shocked. He's always here. He's absolutely, right, you know, Bob and Sharon Allen, they're just always here. And you recognize there are people that have maturity. They're not hurting every day. It's, you're aware at certain moments in time. So there are people that you are trusting their maturity to ask for help or, you know, things like that. You often, you know, the shepherd leaves the 99 to go after the one. It's easy. Who's missing? That's an easy way to identify. So yeah, one man can't pastor, you know, an exceptional man can pastor 75 people if he does everything himself. That's if you're exceptional. But most of us are not exceptionally talented, brilliant people. So the answer is you have to delegate. I am doing what is necessary in a large church. I am training you to have compassion. That is the hope. That's the only way. Otherwise, you know, the guy who is trying to, it's like my conversation with pioneers who pick everybody up for church. How many seats are in your car? 5? Okay, you're done. That's as big as your church gets. So that's not going to work. You have to enlarge. That's what I'm trying to do, is I'm opening your eyes. So what do you have here, 35 guys, however many guys are here. If 25 of you would take it serious and would look, I multiply our compassion. That's how you do it. So that is your job. That is the whole idea. Ephesians, he gave some to be pastors and teachers, equipping the saints for the work of the ministry. That's my job. My job is not to do the work of the ministry. It's impossible. I will not have hours in the day. I worked yesterday from 8:30 in the morning till 9:30 at night. I banged out 3 sermons and I wrote a chapter of a book. Okay, that was my job yesterday. So I had a job. I got work coming up, so I worked my butt off. But the only way is I have delegated pastors who they're overseeing other areas like youth. But greater than that, then, each of us are trying to train men to take responsibility. Training others for the work of the ministry. That's how you have to do it. And that's how you never want to, insecure men want to be the center of attention and everything. Right? That's why in the concert ministry from the earliest day, my father never one time pulled the altar call in the concert ministry. Never. Because he's trying to multiply his effectiveness by training other men. But compassion is like that, right? I don't have to do everything. I'm a success if I can train and put heart and spirit in others so that they do the work of the ministry. That's what you got to do. Yep.
Pastor, just with compassion, it seems like at times you get stirred or moved during a sermon or during a conference.
Yep.
How important is attacking immediately?
It is important. You should always act. You know, the Bible says that when Jesus called them, and immediately they left their nets. So there is an element to that. But let's be honest, Lem. I don't know anybody who has full compassion every day. Right there, and I was in South Africa when we first got there. Man, I'd go out and just see the poverty and the need. Is we would go into these township areas, they're living in shacks, dirt. Everywhere is dirt, and they're these cages stacked up of chickens that they're going to sacrifice to their ancestors. You know, I'd get there and be like, man, dirt and chickens. I'm like, wow, these people need you. But then time would go by, you're drained by daily demands and needs, and then I say to Lisa, that's all I see is dirt and chickens. I'm sick of it, right? So that's not good. So what we have to do is we have to refuel. I don't know, that's totally normal. There is nothing wrong with someone who my compassion tank is running empty. That to me is actually what I say. That is a personal sign. When people tell me their problems, when my compassion tank is full or doing at a good level, I care. Like, what? You're standing on a bridge. We got to fix this. I'm going to pray for you. God's going to help you. But I've been giving out. Give. I go on these trips from, I'm up at 6 in the morning giving out every conversation, every meal. I'm preaching, answering questions. When I get back, then someone says, I'm standing on a bridge, and I'm like, and your point is? So, and I'm being honest with you, I'm totally drained. My compassion tanks in. Whenever I see that, I think, okay, I need to stop and refuel, which I spend time in the Word of God. I read my Bible. Now I'm not looking for sermons. I am simply filling up the tank. So, yes, it is important. Attack it while God tells you, yes, respond immediately. But even if you respond immediately, your compassion is going to drain because you're giving out. Virtue has gone out. That ministry, by nature, is giving out. So you're full of compassion. You hit it immediately. In a few weeks, in a month, you'll be running on empty. The red light going ding, 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 ding. Okay, fuel up. Ask God. God, I can't be... It's not good that people are standing on the bridge and I don't care. So you got to help me. I refuel. I'll spend hours sometimes just doing nothing but reading my Bible, feeding my soul. When I drive in the car, listen to the Bible. Feed. And now I care again. So that's normal. Okay? Somebody else. Thinking. David?
Yeah, sure, I do have a question.
Okay. I can tell your head goes to the side when you're about to ask.
How do you know if you're serving the Lord with all humility?
That's a you ask yourself personal questions. I think that's the, who am I doing this for? And so if I'm doing it for people, their response sends me over the edge. You know? I preached and no one said it was a good sermon. Then I'm doing it for them, not me. You know, or I'm doing it for pride or, you know. Yeah, so, but you have to honestly, you don't just celebrate, you don't just examine and rehearse the good points in life. You got to rehearse. I was really funky in that period of time and God really helped me. That's being honest. You got to self-assess. In an honest way, not editing out the bad parts. That's how you know the Bible is an honest book. It's true. How do I know? Because the stories of people are very honest. They're painful. If it was a made-up book, it'd be like, and they're floated off the ground, and they never said a bad word, and they always had a good attitude. That's not real, right? So you've got to be honest. Good. Somebody else. Something you want to ask. Ryan?
You're talking about compassion and filling up the tank when you're depleted. And by reading the Bible, I know for me, sometimes it's like, you read the Bible and it's like, it's not getting in there sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess my question is,
yeah,
is that something that you pray for and ask God? Is like, you know,
well, yes,
fill up the tank? Because like, yeah, sometimes it feels like it's not penetrating.
Yes, yeah, I pray in the morning. I'm praying, God, open my eyes. Yesterday was my specific prayer, is God, you have to open my eyes this morning, because I got a lot of needs. People need it. I need sermons. You need to open my eyes today. And as I was reading my Bible reading, things were catching my eye. So some practicals, Ryan, number one is, as I say, I read systematically. Okay, sometimes you're not getting anything out of it. I'm in the book of Numbers at the moment, and what is it? Chapter 7. It's the one, it was in the audio Bible at 1.4. It was like 11 minutes long. It's the one where every leader comes and gives the exact same, right? And he brought one dish, one plate, one bowl, one, you know. And it goes on, or, you know, and he begat and begat and he begat and she begat and they begat and they begat, and like, so you're not getting a lot out of that. So that's why I read systematically. I read in 6 different places in the same day. So that I'm, if the reason why I'm not getting anything out of it is just because I'm in a section like that. But then I'm moving and I'm reading in Acts. I'm reading in, you know, today I'm reading in Leviticus. Leviticus, 1 Kings, Proverbs, somewhere, Ezekiel, Acts, and 2 Corinthians. So that's a broad cross-section. I'm less likely to get bogged down into something I get nothing out of. Second, it is sometimes I read and it's like not a single thing appeared to me. What did I just read? That's okay. That's not wrong, but it shouldn't be every day. The answer to that, have a study Bible. So what I do sometimes is I'll read a chapter and then I'll look at the study Bible notes. So I just read it, nothing occurred to me, but now when I look at the notes, I have it electronically, it's on the side, and when I read it, it's like, oh, I missed that. So that's a practical way to jog and get more out of it. The greatest one, Life Application Study Bible, is a fantastic study Bible because it is practical. It applies God's word to your life. So that is things, and but then you're, you know, slowing down to try to see if you're getting something out of it. But then there are days I just said, okay, nothing occurred to me, didn't see anything, but it's supernatural nonetheless. God's doing something even if I can't identify it. Daniel?
Relates to balancing compassion. When you're a pioneer pastor, I've always pictured, like, you were talking about, like, focus on those that you see potential. You don't obviously waste your time on religious people, but in regards to maybe like a homeless person, is there an element where you would maybe wouldn't, you know, maybe a minimal crazy person, you wouldn't invite them necessarily to your church, but you would maybe give a direct witness, just see if there's a response.
Sure, sure.
And then
but God has to do a miracle, yeah, right? So there, the point is, I mean, God can save crazy people, but you have to, in the first place, Daniel, is like I say, odd people, the smaller the church is, the more noticeable they are. My first building was 1,200 square feet. The sanctuary was, you know, what, when you take out nursery and bathrooms and stage, the auditorium was maybe 600, 700 square feet, right? That's very small. One crazy dude, one stinky dude, you can't hide him. That's simple. So you have to be very cautious. You need some good converts, some quality people. And it's a trap. That's why I'm saying to guys, you are, but you just got to be logical. God is the God of logic. It makes common sense. If your building is only a little bit bigger than, you know, three times the size of this table, to bring in Mr. Homeless Dude with his shopping cart, it's just not going to work, is it? You're not going to hide that dude. And so every person coming in like, oh, do I have to look like that to go to this church? It's not going to work. So common sense. But overall, in people, you are looking for response. Homeless, crazy person, can you give me a ride? Absolutely not. Nope. They got to have a response themselves. They have no problem scoring drugs, picking up their welfare check, whatever. So you got to have a response, yeah. But that's just common sense. Yep.
So when you're talking about Paul understood that he wasn't serving people, right? And you talk about the passion that's that feeling inside that you want to help people. What is that correlation between, you know, you're serving God, but you're also wanting to serve people, help people?
I help people because I'm serving God. So therefore, their response, right? I had somebody that single-handedly I have in all my ministry, I spent more time helping. I gave more money in crisis than probably I ever have. And then the moment we gave a challenge, she said, Pastor Greg, can kiss my, you know, like, that made me feel warm and fuzzy inside. But I'm not serving her. I try to help her, but I'm serving the Lord. So therefore, oh well, win some, lose some, I move on. If I'm serving people, I'm devastated. Like, how could you do that to me after all that I've done for you? Right? That's unhealthy. So that's why. If I serve God, some people are helped, some people are not. Okay. But I'm faithful. I do what's right regardless of response. Yeah? If you're serving people, their response is everything to you. Yeah. So that's what you got to do. Good. Those are some good questions. Okay. Pass these out. Take one. All right.